From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
On the flight home from El Paso to Washington last night, the president spoke to reporters on Air Force One and told them he was considering commuting the sentence of former Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich.
His wife, I think, is fantastic, and I'm thinking about commuting his sentence very strongly.
The president likes to change the subject if he can when his news coverage is bad. His news coverage was something that he was, fuming about all day yesterday, so I don't think it's a surprise that he tried doing something to change a headline. And he came back and he mentioned this. It sounds like, according to the Pool Report, he raised it several times.
On Twitter, Patty said, quote, "Our president's comments on Air Force One last night makes us very hopeful that our almost 11-year nightmare might soon be over. We are very grateful."
14 years is a long time. I don't think anybody would lose sleep if he was commuted. But I would say that commutation should first be an acceptance of wrongdoing.
Five Illinois congressmen are pushing back. They're on record urging the president not issue the commutation.
No, you are not fallen into a time warp. We are once again hearing from President Trump that he is again considering giving a commutation or possibly even a pardon to former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. We're going to talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. Sean Crawford is away. Joining us, as always, here in the studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler, outgoing director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS and a longtime State House reporter and observer. And on the line from Chicago is Tina Svondelis, who covers politics for the Chicago Sun-Times, and Tony Arnold, who covers politics, state politics, for Chicago public radio station WBEZ. Tony and Tina. Oh, I just noticed that. Tony and Tina, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Good to be.
Definitely heard that before.
Sorry, I'm a cliche.
All right.
Let's begin. You know, a little later in the show, we're going to talk about State Senator Tom Cullerton, who, as we discussed last week, is under federal indictment, and the latest with him in his ongoing Senate seat. We're going to talk about gun laws in Illinois in the wake of the mass shootings in Texas and Ohio, and also about Ivanka Trump's tweets about Chicago and gun violence. But first, Air Force One, the president had flown to Texas and Ohio, meeting with people about these terrible mass shootings, and he holds a gaggle with reporters. I think all of us probably saw the readout of it the White House sent out that evening. Tina, can you begin by telling us what the president said?
I'm sure it was, as you said, it was a Pool Report that came out pretty late. It was about 11:30 p.m., and it seemed like a lot of the conversation he had with reporters was off the record, but he really wanted the reporters to know on the record that he was considering commuting Blagojevich's sentence. He talked about how he thought Patty Blagojevich was a strong woman. He saw her on Fox News, his favorite channel, and that he was strongly considering commuting the 14-year sentence. And I guess everyone just kind of all media of the world kind of started to freak out at that point.
Tony, Tina mentioned that President Trump has seen Patty Blagojevich on Fox News. Can you talk a little bit about how her, you know, the media strategy she's been pursuing in the last year or so?
Yeah, her strategy's been pretty much she's appeared on Fox News at least a half dozen times now. And clearly she's doing that to talk directly to the president because it's well reported that he watches Fox News all day. And so it certainly has his attention in that he keeps bringing up, well, maybe I'm going to do something here to do a favor to Rod Blagojevich. And in his comments on Air Force One Thursday night, he even talked about how great Patty Blagojevich is. But here we are again where, right now nothing's happened. He keeps dangling this in front of the Blagojevich family and doesn't do anything. And here we are again. He tweeted out after saying these comments on Air Force One that It's back under review, or the White House staff's continuing to review this matter. I don't know what there is left to review about the case of Rod Blagojevich and whether he deserves to get out of prison early or not that the White House staff is supposedly doing here. But that's what, you know, the president keeps doing it. And I guess, frankly, I'm a little baffled by why the National Press Corps cares so much about Rod Blagojevich's case, just because he's obviously a big deal in Illinois. But if you're, you know, somebody in Ohio or Florida or somewhere else, I don't know that what happens to Rod Blagojevich is at the top of your mind most days.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the Louisiana politician who politicians who have gone away for corruption. And like, I don't think I could name the governor of, you know, a former corrupt governor of another state. Yet Rod Blagojevich continues to be this national source of fascination for people. Tina, what is the White House saying about, you know, we heard a clip at the beginning that this was, maybe a distraction tactic. And I want to come back to that in a minute. But first, what is the sort of the official story, and I guess Jared Kushner is involved with this, Tina?
Yeah. Well, I would say the New York Times is reporting that Jared Kushner he's been kind of in charge of pardons and commutations, or he's been handling a lot of that, and that he had suggested that Blagojevich be pardoned. And then there was another official that said that he had favored a commutation. So it kind of seems like this was in the back burner. We're not quite sure. We have our ideas of why the president talked about it at that time, but we don't know how long this had been brewing, but apparently Jared Kushner had been involved in this decision.
So, and I guess his view from some of the reporting we saw is that this would make Democrats happy, right? Tina, what do we know about how Democrats feel about a potential commutation or pardon?
We know that some Democrats really, really don't want him to have a commutation. We know the governor, Pritzker, on the campaign trail last year and currently says that he belongs in prison. We have also a lot of Republicans in our state who are very unhappy. They believe, you know, people that saw everything, who went through all the impeachment proceedings, who are still kind of disgusted at what he did, who are really upset. But then you do have some Democrats in our state, like Senator Dick Durbin, who last year said that he did think that this prison sentence was too long. I reached out to his office yesterday, and he was not commenting. So you do have some people in our state, some Democrats, who want to help him. The Reverend Jesse Jackson wrote a letter to the White House to try to get a pardon for Blagojevich. Apparently that is being considered in the Trump administration. So Jesse Jackson might have some pull in this.
Tony, Tina mentioned there just a moment ago that the Republicans in Illinois don't want this. And I know you covered the Republican congressional delegation's letter to the president. What did they say?
They said that, Blagojevich is a stain on Illinois, and that to commute his sentence or let him out of prison early would be a huge disservice because his sentence sent a message about pay-to-play politics. Frankly, I think it'd be – I'm wondering what the Republican Party in Illinois would do if a Republican president were to commute Blagojevich or pardon him, because I still get press releases routinely from the Republican Party tying – any Democrat to Blagojevich. Even earlier this year, they routinely try to tie Governor Pritzker to Blagojevich. I think during his budget address earlier this year, they had a press release that said Pritzker is the new Blagojevich. So would this, if Blagojevich is let out of prison early because of Donald Trump, in a way excusing some of what he did, would that then diminish any future, any future criticisms that the Republican Party here in Illinois would have against any other Democrats? It's been 10 years since Blagojevich's arrest, and they still like to use Blagojevich as a punching bag, tying him to any current Democrat. In some ways, I think it could diminish any future ties that they want to do to any other Democrat to the former governor.
Although I guess if Blagojevich follows in the tried and true post-prison career of politicians, he may end up with a radio show or something like that and then just be back in the culture. I mean, we've seen a lot of other politicians do that. He actually did it while he was either, I guess, awaiting trial or between trials. I lose track of when it was, but he briefly hosted a radio show in Chicago. Charlie, I want to ask you, we heard a clip at the beginning of the show about this idea of distraction. And the president, when he starts getting some really bad press, be it about the treatment of immigrants at the border, kids in cages, that sort of thing, he will often try and redirect the press's attention. Do you buy that argument as to what's happening here?
I certainly do. I guess you would say political strategists would tell people, if you're in trouble, get the media to look somewhere else. Because there was a lot of criticism about the president's reaction to the horrible events in Texas and in Ohio. There were calls for him to take a strong stand against the NRA, which appears unlikely to occur. And so while people are worried about gun control, on the one hand, people who want to see fewer guns, on the other hand, people who are very committed to the Second Amendment who don't want any further restrictions, this is a convenient way to get all of us talking about something else. And so we're talking about Rod Blagojevich. And the president passed it off that, well, this was just, he really didn't do anything bad, anything that other politicians, politicians all talk that way. Well, I don't, but other politicians do. And it was those sleaze bags over in the Justice Department. The fact of the matter is, Rod Blagojevich went over and beyond anything any other politician in Illinois has done, to my knowledge. Because if you read the indictment, everybody focused on him having this bleeping golden opportunity to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat. But look at the other counts, the ones where he tried to shake down a children's hospital for reimbursements they were entitled to from the state that he wouldn't release unless they gave him a contribution. When he tried to shake down racetrack industry, all the other things. As a matter of fact, his cavalier approach to being governor in and of itself with no criminal acts, in my judgment, would have made him subject to be impeached.
And in fact, a lot of the articles of impeachment were not related to
the they were related to the kind
charges.
Of things. You know, you're the governor, but our system has three branches. And you may not like what the General Assembly does, but you don't have the power to just go ahead and do your own thing anyway. You know, those kinds of things. And he also, there was only one person who voted against impeaching him in the House, and that was his sister-in-law in one vote. The Senate vote to remove him from office was unanimous. Not only that, the Senate also, in a second vote, unanimously said Rod Blagojevich may never run for any state or local office in the state of Illinois ever again for all eternity.
All right, so we have now spent another 12 minutes talking about Rod Blagojevich. I suspect this will not be the last time, but let's put a pin in that conversation. I'll just wrap up by saying that, and I think it was probably clear from Charlie's comments, but I've argued before that, you know, it was actually the things that were legal that Blagojevich did that left the most lasting damage on Illinois, and that is failing to reconcile the spending he wanted to do with the amount of money you need to pay for that spending. And that's when Illinois really started digging deeper and deeper into the hole. And then when the Great Recession hit, we have been knocked on our backs ever since, financially at least. Charlie mentioned the gun laws and the mass shootings, and that's why a lot of us are suspicious that the president sort of tried to redirect our attention. But let's talk about Illinois and gun laws. Tina, you covered both the mayor and the governor earlier this week. And what was their reaction to these mass shootings elsewhere?
Well, I would say that Mayor Lightfoot definitely laid the blame on the mass shootings on the president. Obviously, he didn't do it, but she's basically saying that it's his rhetoric and his tweets that provoke things. So she is definitely targeting him. She said that he needs to set a better, clearer moral tone because what he's been doing is blowing every racist, xenophobic dog whistle. And so the mayor is urging him to kind of get Congress to get some more gun reform bills, which, you know, obviously no, the Democrats and Republicans are not on the same page with that. And the governor told us that he met with staffers over the weekend to talk about gun control in Illinois, but he's also urging the Congress and the president to stand up. So both of them are saying we need federal laws. They think that we do a pretty good job in Illinois of trying to enact the gun control laws. Obviously, there's still more things to do. But Pritzker said that he wants federal laws to address high-speed, high-capacity magazines and universal background checks. And the other side of that is this is the same day that the president said that he would support red flag laws, which are trying to get guns out of the hands of the mentally ill, which we already have laws in place in Illinois. So that's kind of been the Republican spin of calls for gun control after these mass shootings, is that you should be targeting the access of guns for the mentally ill. And Democrats are saying that there needs to be way more.
Yeah, and you mentioned a moment ago that Mayor Lightfoot pointed the blame at the president, at least for sort of creating an atmosphere in which this sort of division is encouraged. And Pritzker did the same thing when he was here in Springfield. And Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton was there, and she said, as a woman of color, this is quoting her, quote, as a woman of color, I've faced racism my entire life. So it's not that it's something new, but she says she has not heard this level of boldness coming directly from the White House, saying that people who are American do not belong here. And she's referring, of course, to President Trump's recent suggestion that four congresswomen who are U.S. citizens and women of color, that they leave the country. Tony, what do we know about what Pritzker's views are on gun control going back to the campaign last year and what he's done in office this year?
He has a background of working for an advocacy group called the Coalition Against Handgun Violence. And, he's done work on that. And this week he said, after some prodding by reporters, that he'd be in favor of a ban on weapons with high capacity magazines. I think, to go back a little bit, earlier this year, Illinois had its own mass shooting in Aurora, in the western suburbs of Chicago. It was a workplace shooting. Five people were killed. I think five more were injured. And in the response to that was some legislation in Springfield that was nicknamed Fix the Floyd. It would have done a few things. It would require people to get fingerprinted to get a card, to have a license to have a gun. It would also give police the authority, or at least a task force, the authority to go and get guns from people who have certain convictions or domestic violence in their background. And it would be determined then that they shouldn't have those guns if their FOID card had been revoked. I think this was one of the bigger issues in the spring during the legislative session in response to this shooting in Aurora, that for all the things that the legislature did, this is maybe one of the biggest omissions of things that didn't get passed for, I think, a variety of reasons. And it's still out there. It's still lingering. I think it's interesting to hear the governor this week talk about his wanting to ban certain weapons and not really address this bill that's still lingering. And I kind of wonder if this is one of the big pieces of legislation that's either going to come up later this year when they reconvene in the fall, or even next year, and how the issue of guns is really addressed. I think it's one of the big outstanding issues here in Governor Pritzker's first year in office.
Charlie, Tony mentioned that Governor Pritzker has a sort of a background. He's a fairly standard Democratic views, at least urban Democratic views on gun control. He favors a so-called assault weapons ban on large capacity magazines. That's from his campaign last year, at least. I've thought that as the particularly downstate, more conservative Democrats have been defeated in recent years. I don't know that there are any still in southern Illinois, whereas just a few years ago there were both House and Senate Democrats in deep southern Illinois who were very pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment voices in the Democratic caucus in the legislature. Do you see that trending in a more liberal direction in the future?
Well, I think in terms of the Democratic Party, yeah, exactly. Those downstate Democrats just aren't there anymore. And part of it is a larger demographic trend, as we've discussed on this show before. A couple generations ago, downstate Democrats, particularly in the southern part of the state, tended to be people who were blue-collar workers at factories and in coal mines. Those ranks have been severely depleted. Factories have closed. Coal mines are shutting down. And so what you would consider the natural affinity for the Democratic Party among people in that area is just gone. As an example, we were the last state, I believe, in the union to allow concealed carry. The sponsor of that legislation was a downstate Democrat, John Bradley, from, I believe, Marion. now that's all changed.
He left, or he was defeated, actually.
Yeah, he was defeated by a Republican.
Right. And his the state senator for that district was defeated, and then his seatmate, another person in a nearby district, left,
yeah,
and then his replacement was defeated.
It used to be gun control was the one issue that you could say partisanship played no part in it. It was all regional. If you were from the city and the suburbs, you tended to favor it. If you were from outside that area, the other 96 counties, particularly rural counties, you were opposed to it. And I don't think that's necessarily true anymore, because I think, by and large, Republicans would be against it and Democrats would be for it. And part of it is because of the, as I said earlier, the changing demographics and the fact that the suburban areas are becoming more Democrat, less Republican, and downstate is more Republican and less Democrat.
All right. Before we leave that topic, Tina, I just want to ask you about something Ivanka Trump got attention for this week related to this gun issue and the mass shootings, as well as the ongoing violence in Chicago. Can you remind us what she said?
Sure. She tweeted, this is the day before our president was going to El Paso and Dayton after the mass shootings. She tweeted about violence in Chicago over the weekend. She said, with 7 dead and 52 wounded, there a playground in the Windy City and little national outrage or media coverage. We must have become numb to the violence faced by inner city communities every day. So in that tweet, it makes it sound like there were 7 people killed and 52 wounded near a single playground in the Windy City. Clearly, that did not happen. Those numbers are correct. Those are the number of people that were wounded and killed in shootings over the weekend. But just that, trying to make it seem like it appeared to be a mass shooting or the misunderstanding or something, prompted another angry response from the mayor. And it's kind of, you know, they've met together, both Lori Lightfoot and Ivanka Trump. And now I believe that they're trying to talk again to try to clear the air on this. And a White House official told our paper this week that Ivanka wants to work with City Hall to plan an event about workforce development and economic opportunity in Chicago. So there was kind of a pullback on that. And there was also a clarification from the White House saying that the facts were not correct in that, that there was no mass shooting near a playground, and that the point was clear that there needs to be attention to these shootings in Chicago as well, not just when these terrible mass shootings happen.
Well, to me, one of the big differences is what's occurring in Chicago, I suspect, here sitting 200 miles away, has more to do with gang structures, gang competition, turf wars, than it does with some crazed white supremacist deciding he's going down to the Mexican border and shoot up all those brown-skinned people that he can find. And it's not a demented individual, somebody mentally ill. It's people who are very much involved in gang warfare.
Right. That's what people are upset about, that you can't compare these things. There was also some discussion with the governor today, this week in response to the mass shootings, about him saying that we haven't had something like that here. And, you know, people are comparing what's worse, mass shootings in these other cities or the constant gun violence that we see in Chicago. So there's been a discussion about that, and just people that are being killed and people that are using it for political points is the point that we're at right now.
See, and I would argue that it all comes down to the availability of guns. I guess that makes me, what's the phrase, a libtard or whatever. But you look at other nations that have the same exposure to video games that we do, Korea, Japan, for example. You look at the violent TV. Canadians see the same TV shows we do. They don't have the kind of difficulties that we do with this kind of violence. We're not the only nation that has people who are mentally ill.
And there does seem to be some sort of growing, somewhat of a growing national consensus about dealing with this. And I would say even beyond, I don't know that it's even fair to say mental illness is the factor here. I mean, some of these people may not have sort of DSM diagnosable mental illness, even if I would, you know, colloquially call them deranged for going and murdering a bunch of people. Some of them just seem to be purely motivated by this hateful white supremacist ideology. And you even had conservative outlets like the National Review saying we need a response to this that's as significant as the one we gave to Al-Qaeda and the terrorism threat, the sort of foreign terrorism threat after 9/11. We need to look at the domestic terrorism threat. And that's basically exactly what this is. We only have a few minutes left in the program. I just briefly also want to return. Last week, we talked about State Senator Tom Cullerton, who I learned from Tina's story this week is, I guess, a third cousin once removed to the Senate President John Cullerton, so different people. But Tony, can you tell us there was some shifting of chairs in the State Senate this week related to Senator Tom Cullerton. What happened there?
Well, in response to the federal indictment for being on the Teamsters payroll and not doing any actual work, at least that's the allegation from federal prosecutors, in response to that indictment, Senator Tom Cullerton had his assignment changed. He's now chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee. He had been the chairman of the Labor Committee in the state Senate, which, you know, dealt with union issues. And here he is facing allegations related to the Teamsters union. So this is a different assignment for him. However, that means that he's still getting the same pay structure that, that chairman of committees get in response. And so that he's not really being any substantial way punished for this indictment. Senate President John Cullerton's spokesman said that this is a this was a mutual decision. The Democrats have said that this, you know, innocent until proven guilty for why they're not calling on Tom Cullerton to resign because of this indictment. You do see calls for resignation then in response to other politicians getting indicted. That's not happened here. And for whatever reason, all, as well, the Republicans who by all intents and measures could be looking at this as a big pickup for them, this seat as a big pickup for them, have not been calling for Tom Cullerton's resignation as well.
All right. Well, we will continue following this case as it works its way through the federal court system. Time now for notes from the field. We've only got about 15 seconds each. Tina Svondelis.
I'll talk fast. Governor Pritzker this week signed a bill that will rename the ethnic village at the Illinois State Fair to the Village of Cultures. But so far, that's not until January 1st. And if you go to the state fair right now, it's a cutoff sign that says ethnic villa.
And I would endorse going there and going to the Cuban booth, which has a delicious pulled pork wrap sandwich. Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the state is beginning to distribute $20 million to community organizations and local governments to help make sure that everyone gets counted in the census next year. And what's at stake is representation in Congress, as well as distribution of federal grants that are based on population.
And I will just briefly mention that there was a federal disaster declaration for agriculture in the state of Illinois. And I was had the opportunity to talk to John Sullivan, the state ag director, toward the end of the week. And, you know, I think for those of us who are not from farm backgrounds, you look around, it's beautiful weather. The corn looks high as an elephant eye, or at least a lot of it does. And you say, where is the disaster? But he says the early wet weather we had this year just wreaked havoc with farmers trying to get their seeds in the field. I actually have a farmer in the family I was talking to recently by marriage, and he said that he has never seen a year like this. He's been farming for more than 50 years. That is all the time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler. Tina Svondelis of the Chicago Sun-Times, and Tony Arnold of Chicago Public Radio Station WBEZ. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.